Hello, friends. Alan Kirshner here from Eschatos Ministries. Since we went live with Bible Prophecy Daily, we have delivered a program every weekday to listeners. With a premillennial, pre-wrath, rapture focus, our Bible teachers are the best at helping Christians understand and prepare for Christ's return. Would you prayerfully consider your regular support of this ministry? You can easily do so by clicking the support button in the corner of the podcast website at BibleProphecyDaily.com. Thank you.
You're listening to Bible Prophecy Daily, a weekday podcast where Bible prophecy matters and matters greatly.
Greetings, fellow believers in our Lord Jesus Christ. Today, I will look at the word abyss and the phrase the pit of the abyss. Now, before the resurrection of Jesus, when people died, their souls went into Hades, that's the term in the Greek, or Sheol, which is the word in the Hebrew. And of course, the body went into the ground, that is basically to the chemicals of the soil. Eventually. At that time, Hades was comprised of three sections. At Luke 16, 22 through 26, Jesus described those three sections. One was the place of comfort for believers, which is also called paradise. The second place is the place of torment, which is where the unbelievers went. And then the third place is a great chasm that was right there between the two. Now, in the Old Testament, there are several words used to indicate the place of the dead, either as the grave itself for the body, or the place where the soul goes, or sometimes both. A word such as Sheol, Shekath, Bor, Takti. I'm just going to look at two of them. 1 Samuel 2:6 uses the word Sheol. Says, the Lord puts to death and makes alive. He brings down to Sheol and brings up. Now, in the Greek translation of the Hebrew, which is called the Septuagint, Hades is the word used there for Sheol. Ezekiel 32:18 uses the term, the land of the lower parts. It reads, a son of man, lament for the hordes of Egypt and bring it down, her and the daughters of the mighty nations, to the land of the lower parts, with those who go down to the pit. Now, it's the same in the Greek language. Different words are used to express the various factors associated with death and the underworld. Two, specifically, are Hades and the abyss. The word in the Greek is abusos. That's A-B-U, two S's, O-S. And both are used in the Greek translation of the Old Testament. The word abyss is used a few times for the general place of the dead. At Job 38:16 through 18, God rebukes Job and basically asks the question, do you have management over death? The passage reads, have you entered the springs of the sea, or have you walked in the tracks of the abyss? Have the gates of death been revealed to you, or have you seen the gates of deep darkness? At Psalm 71:20, it reads, you who have shown me many troubles and distresses will make me alive again. You will bring me up again from the depths of the earth. Now, the Hebrew construction there is tehom aretz. But in the Greek, it says from the abyss of the earth. And so we see that the word abyss is sometimes used to refer to Sheol and Hades in general. Now, according to Ephesians 4:9, when Jesus died, his soul went into the lower parts of the earth. That would be into Hades. The passage reads, now this expression he ascended, what does it mean except that he also had descended into the lower parts of the earth? At Ezekiel 32:18, it's called the land of the lower parts. called the abyss of the earth in the Septuagint at Psalm 71:20, called paradise at Luke 23:43, called Hades and Sheol at Psalm 16:10 and Acts 2, and is called the hand of Sheol at Psalm 49:15. Well, while Jesus was in Hades, he visited a spirit prison called Tartarus. Tartarus is different from both paradise and torments, but it's located in Hades. According to 1 Peter 3:19 and 20, he went and made a proclamation to spirits in prison. Now, the only place this could be is in the great chasm that is there between paradise and torments. The spirits imprisoned there are specifically described as the rebellious angels who did some nasty things before the flood. 2 Peter 2:4 calls this prison chains of darkness in Tartarus. At Jude 6, the prison is called perpetual bonds under darkness, where they remain until judgment at the great day, that is, at the time of judgment during the day of the Lord. It is this prison that is probably in view as the pit of the abyss at Revelation 9:1, in which that term only occurs there. In the New Testament, the word abyss by itself actually does double duty. On the one hand, it refers to the general place where the souls of the dead go, the same as Sheol and Hades. And that would be either a paradise for believers or torment for the unbelievers before the resurrection of Jesus. On the other hand, it's also used for the pit of the abyss. This is a special prison that I already mentioned. Since this pit is located in the abyss, that is in Hades, the only place that would be a place to find it would be in the great chasm. Now, the word abyss also occurs at Luke 8:31, just for completion, since it is an established fact that the demons will end up in the abyss during the day of the Lord's judgments, along with Satan and the other angels, fallen angels. The demons are all aware of their future destiny. On this occasion, when Jesus cast out some demons, they begged him not to cast them into the abyss before the time. Of course, they're disoriented to the true timeline of God's intended plan for them, that is, that will occur after the Battle of Armageddon. So accordingly, when faced with this exorcism at the hands of Jesus, they express their knowledge of their destiny, but also their disorientation. Luke 8:31 says, "And they were entreating him not to command them to depart into the abyss." Matthew 8:29 records it this way, "Have you come here to torment us before the time?" So what we could do here is we could add "before the time" at Luke 8:31, and we could add the word "in the abyss" at Matthew 8:29. Now, during the 3 days that Jesus was in Hades, he also went into the paradise side. He told the believing thief on the cross, "Today you will be with me in paradise." On that day, they both went into Hades, that is, in the comfort side. And that's what Jesus called paradise. After Christ's resurrection, he took the entire population of paradise into the third heaven and the presence of God. So now, Hades is comprised of just the place of torments, which is for unbelievers, and the great chasm. Today, any time a believer dies, he goes immediately into the presence of God. At Romans 10:7, the word abyss is used as a synonym for Hades. Paul wrote, who will descend into the abyss, that is, to bring Christ up from the dead? Now, the purpose for this question is to challenge man-made philosophies that attempt to achieve the righteousness of God on human terms rather than on God's terms. The religious Jews held to a human viewpoint philosophy based on ignorance of God's righteousness and the true nature of the Mosaic law. Their philosophy attempted to achieve a right standing before God on their own terms. Paul wrote at Romans 10:3, "For not knowing about God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own, they did not subject themselves to the righteousness of God." And just a few verses before that, at Romans 9:31 and 32, Paul wrote, "However, Israel, pursuing a law or a system of righteousness, did not arrive at that system. Why? Because they did not pursue it by faith, but as though they could do it by works." Verse 6 mentions the righteousness that is out from faith. This refers to gaining righteousness in God's eyes based on God's terms, that is, God's system for becoming reconciled to Him, which of course is by personal trust in Jesus Christ as Savior. The human viewpoint philosophy that operates on distorted logic is described in Isaiah 55, 8, and 9. God says, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." The Jewish religious leaders and the people in general, they knew about these Old Testament prophecies that the Messiah would come from heaven, and that the Messiah would be killed and be raised from the dead. Jesus makes this perfectly clear at Luke 24, 44 through 46. He said to them, "These are my words which I spoke to you while I was still with you, that all the things which are written about me in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms must be fulfilled. So it is written that the Christ would suffer and rise from the dead on the third day." Using this knowledge, the religious leaders attempted to produce their own messianic belief system in two ways. One, either by devising a false reincarnation of the Messiah or a Messiah, or by proclaiming that the Messiah or a Messiah has arrived. This is expressed by the question, "Who will ascend into heaven, that is to bring Messiah down?" The second way is by manufacturing a false resurrection. This is expressed by the question, "Who will descend into the abyss, that is to bring Christ up from the dead?" With this use of the word, we can see that it sometimes serves as a synonym for Hades, the place where the dead go, and where Jesus went temporarily after he died on the cross. As mentioned earlier, Ephesians 4:9, "Into the lower parts of the earth," Luke 23:43, "Today you will be with me in paradise." Now, let's jump to the 70th week of Daniel. The 70th week will begin when a benevolent world ruler will establish a specific 7-year covenant of peace and religious toleration. This 7-year peace experiment will allow Israel to have a sanctuary or temple and to offer animal sacrifices. Now, many of you understand this from the passage at Daniel 9:27, where it reads, "And he will make a covenant with the many for 1 week," that is, 7 years. I believe this is represented by the first seal of Revelation 6. The white horse rider establishes peace without violence, but by forcefully taking control of a 10-nation confederacy and then establishing the covenant experiment. This is strongly indicated because it's the red horse rider of the second seal who takes the peace from the earth. Now, in the Greek, the word peace has the definite article in front of it. That is the word "the," even though it's not shown in most English translations. So Revelation 6:3 should read, "And another, a red horse, went out, and to him who sat on it, it was granted to take the peace from the earth, and that the people would kill one another, and a large sword was given to him." And this is what will begin the great tribulation that Jesus mentioned in Matthew 24:9 through 28. Verse 9 says, "Then they will hand you over to tribulation and will kill you, and you will be hated by all the nations because of my name. And at that time, many will fall away, and they will betray one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will rise up and mislead many people." This then refers to the breaking of the covenant experiment of Daniel 9:27, where it reads, "But in the middle of the week," that is, in the middle of the 7-year period, He will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. At 2 Thessalonians 2, Paul described this as the man of lawlessness who takes his seat in the temple of God, proclaiming himself to be God. And of course, automatically that would include stopping the Jews from sacrificing. Jesus described this event at Matthew 24, 15 and following. He said, "But when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, then there will be a great tribulation." Now, at around the midpoint of the 70th week, the period of the seven-year covenant experiment, Satan's going to be kicked out of heaven. This is recorded at Revelation 12, 7 and following. It reads, "And there was war in heaven, Michael and his angels waging war with the dragon. The dragon and his angels waged war, and they did not prevail. And there was no longer a place found for them in heaven. The great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him." Now, once Satan finds himself kicked out of heaven and limited now to the earth, he will know at that time that he's in big trouble. He knows he needs to take some major steps to escape his assigned destiny in the lake of fire, which is called at Matthew 25, 32, the lake which is prepared for the devil and his angels. At Revelation 12, 12, it reads, "Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to you having great wrath, knowing that he has a short time." Now, in order to do this, he first facilitates the killing of the benevolent world ruler and then resuscitates him and empowers him, which basically makes that person a different person, the man of lawlessness. At Revelation 13, 1 and 2, John is shown an image of the beast kingdom and its historical pedigree, represented by seven heads and ten crowns, and the characteristics of the dominant past kingdoms, leopard, bear, and lion. At Revelation 13, 3 through 8, he is shown the beast person. Verse 3 shows us, "And I saw one of his heads," one of his persons, "as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed." Now, the head is symbolic for a person who is killed and then brought back to life. This is not a resurrection, by the way. It's simply a resuscitation accomplished by Satan and permitted by God just this one time. The wound and its healing take place around the midpoint of the 70th week. And as a result of the healing, the people will be influenced to follow the beast. Revelation 13 continues, "The whole earth was amazed about the beast, and they worshiped the dragon because he gave his authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast? And who is able to wage war with him?'" Let's look at the text. "One of the heads as having been slain." Now we have two words here, "as" and the participle. And then the prepositional phrase, "ace thanatos," that is, unto death. Ace being the preposition and the word thanatos is the word death. The "as" indicates the condition of the head as it appeared to John. By the way, there's not an "if" here in the Greek. The word "slain" is spadzo, S-P-H-A-D-Z-O, as a perfect passive participle in the Greek. Now, the perfect tense looks at action that previously occurred with the result of that action existing as a present reality. So it shows him killed with the result that right now he is in a condition of death. The passive voice indicates that the subject receives the action. In this case, someone brought the action upon him. Someone killed him. Thus, the idea of an active slain. This is not just the idea of killed. That would be a different word. The participle is used as an adjective to describe the condition of this head. The translation should not read "as if," but simply "as slain." That is, in a condition of having been slain. Again, there's no "if" here in the Greek. Now, it's interesting that this is exactly the same perception that John sees of the Lamb at Revelation 5:6 where we find the exact same construction in the Greek, except for the gender. John sees the Lamb of God in the condition of having been slain, just as Jesus appeared as dead. So also this head that John sees appeared as dead. Now, John sees Jesus as slain, and yet standing there in the midst of the throne. John sees the head as slain, and yet healed shortly thereafter. This is further supported by the next sentence, "And his fatal wound was healed." The Greek says, "and his wound of death," the word thanatos again. It's not an apparent wound, but an actual striking with a weapon that results in death. The word wound is PL long A G long A plague. It means a wound, a blow, or a bruise, and usually suggests that a weapon was used. At Revelation 13:14, we are told that a weapon was indeed used to kill the person, the wound of the sword. Now, that doesn't mean that a sword is actually going to be used, but the word sword represents some kind of weapon. We can imagine it's probably an assassin's bullet. The word healed here is an aorist passive indicative. This shows an action within the vision that reverses the condition of death and shows the raised person now alive and well. Revelation 13:14 says, "and came to life." This uses an aorist active indicative of the word zao, Z-A-O, which means to live. Now, the only thing that makes sense and correlates with the literal Greek is that someone died and is brought back to life. There are theories out there. If an ancient kingdom were to have died out, such as Rome, and then be regathered into a Roman confederacy, well, that's not going to make any significant impact on the world. What would die and come back to life to make such an impact could only be a person, and a contemporary person at that. Now, we learn more about this at Revelation 17:8. "The beast that you saw was, and is not, and is about to come up out of the abyss and to go to destruction." The word "was" refers to the person before he was killed. The word "is not" refers to the person when he is killed. And the phrase "to come out of the abyss" refers to the healing of the death wound. When the world ruler died, his soul went into Hades, which is also called the abyss, not the pit of the abyss. When Satan is allowed to bring him back to life, he comes out of Hades. That is, he comes out of the abyss. At that time, Satan will possess and empower him so that he becomes basically an entirely different person. As verse 8 continues, notice that the people are aware of all three aspects of this person. "And those who live on the earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will wonder when they see the beast that he was, and is not, and will come." Now, both the killing and the raising of this world ruler will be visible worldwide, of course, through the global communication network that is in place even today. Perhaps a memorial to this person is taking place, and as he's lying in state, as it were, he suddenly comes back to life. And so the world will be aware that he was alive, he was killed, and he is brought back to life in a supernatural manner. And according to the context, they realize that Satan is the one responsible for this. How that's going to play out is an interesting idea. Now, verses 9 through 11 provide us with some more details. "Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains upon which the woman sits. They are seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, the other has not yet come. And when he comes, he must remain a little while." So we have seven kingdoms and seven kings associated with those kingdoms. At the time of John, these kingdoms with their respective leaders are those who had governing authority over the nation of Israel throughout their history. Five have fallen. That would be Egypt, Assyria, Chaldea, Persia, and Greece. One is. That would be Rome. Number seven has not yet come. This will be the benevolent ruler who takes over the 10-nation confederacy and brokers the 7-year peace experiment. that will begin the 70th week of Daniel. It is said of him that he must remain a little while. This refers to the fact that he is killed 3.5 years after he brokers the 7-year peace experiment. That would be at the midpoint of the 70th week. But John is also shown an eighth king. The beast, which was and is not, is himself also an eighth and is one of the seven, and he goes to destruction. The beast is the personage who exists after the healing and after the empowering by Satan. In other words, number eight is the beast personage who exists after the healing. Again, he was the benevolent world ruler. He is not killed with a weapon to the head, not necessarily to the head. Is one of the seven. In fact, he was number seven. He goes to destruction, and that refers to his ultimate defeat later at Armageddon. It says he's about to come out of the abyss, healed and brought back to life. And at that time, he will become the eighth ruler. It's also said of the eighth that he was and is not and is about to come out of the abyss, as already indicated, Revelation 17, 8. Now, a form of government does not go into or come out of the abyss. It should be clear that about to come refers to the beginning of the eighth king's reign at the midpoint of the 70th week and not to some re-establishment of an ancient kingdom or even a relatively new kingdom, like some have suggested, Hitler's Third Reich. Anyway, this should be viewed from the perspective of the end times generation. For it is that generation which will see the wound and the healing and be awed into worship. Notice that the people of the world will observe that this person was and is not and will come. So now, as I have shown, the abyss is actually a common term for the underworld in general and thus corresponds with Hades. So when Satan brings him back to life, he comes from the abyss, from Hades, back into his body on the earth and becomes number eight. And those who dwell on the earth will wonder when they see the beast that he was and is not and will come. They will see that this person had been alive and that he was killed, and he will be alive again, or he came to life. Thus, at the time that the eighth king, the beast out of the sea, comes on the scene, he will be seen as, pardon the repetition, was the benevolent ruler, is not physically dead and probably lying in state for the whole world to observe, and is about to come. That is, brought back to life before the watching eyes of the entire world. And when the benevolent dictator is killed, his soul goes into the abyss where all the unbelieving dead go. He does not go into the pit of the abyss because the pit is different from the general location of where the dead go, and two, because the pit is locked and will not be unlocked until the fifth trumpet judgment. When Satan is given permission by God to raise this man, the soul returns from the abyss, that is, from Hades. I therefore see that the reason for showing John that the beast comes from the abyss is to clarify that it is indeed a person in view who is first physically slain and then raised by Satan. Now, this factor is also mentioned in Revelation 11, 7. The beast that comes out of the abyss will make war with the two witnesses and overcome them and kill them. Again, this is not a resurrection. It's simply the same thing that was done with many other people in the Bible. Lazarus, for example, and Dorcas at Acts 9, and others, 2 Kings 4 in the Old Testament, Hebrews 11, 35, Matthew 10, 8. However, in this case, the healing is accomplished by the power of Satan through the permissive will of God. This is not a medical resuscitation that often occurs minutes after the death of a person, but rather many hours and perhaps even days after the death. And after healing the world ruler, Satan will empower him to become the man of lawlessness, the one whose coming is in accord with the activity of Satan, with all power and false signs and wonders, and with all the deception of wickedness for those who perish, because they do not accept the love of the truth so as to be saved, according to 2 Thessalonians 2. And this will begin the great tribulation, which could last up to 3 years. But Jesus said that the tribulation would be cut short by his return at an unknown day and hour. This is stated at Matthew 24, 22 through 42, and is portrayed by the sixth seal of Revelation 6. Jesus said, "But immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky. Powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send forth his angels with a great trumpet blast, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from the farthest end of the earth to the farthest end of heaven." And then Revelation 6:12, the sixth seal, is described this way. "And I looked when he broke the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake, and the sun became as black as sackcloth made of hair, and the whole moon became like blood, and the stars of the sky fell to the earth, as a fig tree drops its unripe figs when shaken by a great wind. And the sky was split apart like a scroll when it's rolled up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. Then the kings of the earth and the eminent people and the commanders and the wealthy and the strong and every slave and free person hid themselves in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains. And they said to the mountains and the rocks, 'Fall on us, hide us from the presence of him who sits on the throne, from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of their wrath has come, and who is able to stand?'" So it's then after the return of Jesus that the great day of their wrath will come. These day of the Lord judgments will begin with the seven trumpets. Now, the chronology of Revelation goes back and forth within the timeline. This has been taught about before. The chapters about the trumpet judgments take place chronologically after the chapters about the rise of the beast in chapters 12, 13, and 17. The event at the fifth trumpet judgment of Revelation 9, 1 through 12, where we see the term pit of the abyss, will occur then after the midpoint of the week and after the return of Jesus. So chronologically, the event here and the term pit of the abyss have nothing to do with the healing of the beast and the return of his soul from the abyss at the midpoint of the week several months earlier. Revelation 9, 1 reads, "Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star from heaven, which had fallen to the earth, and the key to the shaft of the abyss," or the pit of the abyss, "was given to him. And he opened the pit of the abyss, and smoke ascended out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened from the smoke of the pit." Now, the star who was given the key to the pit of the abyss is probably Satan himself. He is seen as having fallen, perfect active participle, from heaven, which corresponds with Revelation 12, where Satan is cast down to the earth after losing the war in heaven with Michael. This will occur around the midpoint of the week. Now, there's a different person in view at Revelation 9:1. This is the one who will temporarily give the key to Satan. He obviously takes the key back, where he is seen also at Revelation 20, where this time it is he who opens the pit and then throws Satan in. Okay, the locust demons who will be released at this time are probably the fallen angels who were imprisoned there in connection with the flood. The pit of the abyss has been locked from that time and will now be temporarily unlocked for those demons to take out their wrath on anyone they can. The angel of the abyss at Revelation 9:11 refers to the ranking demon who leads the others when they are released for a short time at the fifth trumpet judgment. The word pit is not repeated in front of abyss because the immediate context indicates that it is indeed the same pit of the abyss that is in view. Now, the name of this angel is the one who ruins or destroys, Abaddon and Apollyon, which is what he and his buddies do for 5 months. It is a ruination or torment that causes people to have a death wish, but it's a wish that won't be granted, Revelation 9, 5 through 6. These demons are given 5 months to torment the unbelieving earth dwellers, and we aren't told what happens at the end of the 5 months. I suggest that since they are given a specific period of time to do their thing, it's at the end of that period they will all be rounded up and put back into the pit. The king of the abyss is best seen as one of them, who was imprisoned there with them. He is their leader. Satan is not the king over the abyss or over Hades. It's a place of judgment for him, not a domain over which he rules. Satan does not rule in hell, as the story goes. Hell is his eternal fire and brimstone destiny that will happen at the end of the thousand-year earthly kingdom. After the Battle of Armageddon, Satan will be chained temporarily in the abyss for 1,000 years, Revelation 20. This is done by the same angel who temporarily gave Satan the key at Revelation 9, an angel of such a stature and power that he's able to grab Satan and throw him into the abyss. That suggests that it's probably Michael, who earlier succeeded in casting Satan to the earth during the war in heaven. Now here at Revelation 9:11, the word abyss occurs without the word pit. The context indicates that this refers to the same pit of the abyss of chapter 9. This is not inconsistent, since the pit of the abyss is part of the abyss in general. So at this time, it is also Satan's angels, demons, unclean spirits, who will be cast into the pit. Zechariah 13:1 also describes this event at the start of the earthly kingdom, where it reads, "And I will remove the false prophets and the unclean spirits from the land." And then, at the end of the earthly kingdom, Satan will be cast into the lake of fire for all eternity. And the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are also, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever.
Thanks for listening to Bible Prophecy Daily. We hope you learned something valuable today. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss an episode.